what triggered this bizarre behavior.
Journey into the cold heart of Northern Darkness with Nordic Crimes.
That case became like a scene from a horror movie.
A new true crime documentary series that chilled the bone.
The hunger for killing is increasing in the course of these homicides.
Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Nordic Crimes is a part of the Acast family.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, and welcome back to 1 Minute Remaining. My name is Jack Lawrence, the host and creator of this show. Today is part three of the Stephen Lawrence story. Arrested, tried, and convicted for the murder of his father in 1992 after an investigator would say it was him who deliberately started that fire at his father's home. It is a crime Steve has always maintained from day one that he's innocent of.
Three-way calls are strictly prohibited in the violation of MDOC policy.
Thank you for using GTL.
Hello, Jack.
Steve, how are you, my friend?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm not too bad, sir. I'm not too bad. What's been happening?
Oh, nothing much. Just prison life.
What was the lockdown situation you mentioned? Was it just a test lockdown or something?
They do that every month. Sometimes this new warden, he'll do it 3-4 times a month sometimes, so...
For any particular reason, or
it's a little bit
just
different.
Just to annoy people?
Yeah, basically, yeah. But there's usually something going on, you know, because there's a lot of idiots.
In our previous episodes, I have spoken about and, in fact, played snippets of a TV special report that was done in the early 90s on Inside Edition. It was their top story of the night about how this multi-millionaire grocery tycoon was killed in a tragic house fire, a fire that was set by his own son.
But first, our lead story. Steve Lawrence was a rich kid. He lived in the same resort community as his father. But then an arsonist started terrorizing the neighborhood, and before it was over, Steve's dad was dead. Guess who did it?
So through today's episode, we will refer back to this report on a number of occasions and its claims that were made, and give Steve the opportunity to respond to them. So in our previous episode, we heard how straight after his father's death, Steve's brother Don would go out and hire his own private detective in order to look into his father's death. Part of the investigator's job was to allegedly eliminate all of the siblings as suspects. However, Steve says he was the only one that was ever looked at. And it wouldn't be long before the PI, Jerry Mattioli, would start to raise what he says were suspicious red flags and behaviours exhibited by Steve. The first being supposedly at the scene of the crime itself. In fact, in the as-mentioned Inside Edition special story on this particular crime, they show some home video shot on the night of the fire. And for a brief moment, you can see Steve by one of the fire trucks.
This dramatic video shows Willa's youngest son, Stephen, at the scene of the fire, watching his father's house go up in flames, with his father trapped inside. These actions that night would raise suspicions with investigators and drive a wedge.
There's a very brief moment where you're caught on video, sort of standing in front of a fire truck, and, you know, they make claims that you were far too calm for someone whose father was, you know, just been killed in a fire. You know, I always find that a very hard one to sort of demonize, because you never really know how someone's going to react to a situation, and, you know, everyone's different. What's your sort of response to those sort of suggestions of you being so calm about it all?
Well, it definitely wasn't a calm evening. It was very, very scary and shock. I don't know if you can really describe her, Ken, what it's like. I mean, it was horrible. It was horrible for my kids to watch. You know, I was worried about them, you know, with seeing that and going through that in their life. And it was, there was not anything being calm or anything. It was total disbelief and just, it was terrible.
From that night, another claim, which we have already touched on, but is quite an important one, is that it is said Steve would direct fire crews to the wrong window when asked which one was his father's bedroom. The next voice you hear will be the voice of Jerry Mattioli, the private investigator who would be hired by Don Lawrence to look into his father's murder. And he would feature heavily in this Inside Edition news story.
When the firefighters arrived, Stephen didn't direct them to his father's bedroom. As the video shows, the firefighters were attending to other parts of the house and not to the side where Willard Lawrence was located.
Steve maintains that he never directed anyone to any window, and it was in fact his own brother Don who would do this, and even made notes about it. They, again, as you've already said, they make a big song and dance of the fact that you were to direct them to the wrong window when it came to that the fire that night. So you say it was actually Don that was directing them, the firefighters, that evening.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Like I say, and during Candy's trial, it was absolutely proven, and I've got, I don't know if you have them, but I have Don's notes where he wrote in longhand there that he directed the fireman to Dad's window.
Right, so he's actually written down and said that he directed the firefighters that evening.
Yes.
Another claim of odd behaviour, supposedly, was that Steve and his family would disappear for a few days after the fire, and they claimed that Steve was out of contact. No one had any idea where they'd gone.
Something bizarre happened. A family conference was called to discuss an investigation into the fire. For some reason, Stephen did not show up. But private investigator Jerry Mattioli was present. He was hired by the Lawrence estate to look into the death of Willard Lawrence and eliminate the children as suspects. Steve's absence raised immediate questions.
Steve had absented himself from that meeting and didn't tell the family where he was going. He and his wife and children left and didn't return for 2 or 3 days.
They talk about this family meeting that was called to discuss an investigation into your father's death, and they make a point of, or the private investigator makes a point of, you not showing up. You didn't tell your family where you were going. You and the kids left and didn't return for 3 or 4 days. Talk me through that situation.
After, and I can't remember, I know it was after the funeral, after my dad's funeral, and my sister Judy, when she was there, went to some psychic, and she was all, of course, we're all traumatized, things like that. So, and she goes to the psychic, and the psychic said, talked about car bombs, and this isn't over, and everything, and I mean, it freaked us out. So, after the funeral was over, my boys and my wife and I, we got in the car, and, you know, I didn't want to be in the house anymore. It was so traumatizing, because we were right next door, and it was horrible just living there. And so anyway, we went up north by Traverse City and stayed. And the thing is, and I know my boys could tell you, and Candy, every morning or every time we got in the car, because my sister said that, you know, the psychic said car bombs, I made the kids stay many, many feet away, and Candy too. And I went and turned on the car, you know, to make sure. I mean, we were scared to death. And when I came back, when we did, and that's when we stopped it, and I was in constant contact with them by phone, with my family, as far as brothers and stuff like that. And we came back, we went to my brother Don's house, and that's when we met Jerry Mattioli, and he frisked me at the door, and then had the tapes, and that was part of the trial too. You know, he, from that minute on, you know, or even before, he was out to frame me.
Hold up. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
So more claims are made about how Steve would react to his father's death, apparently more distant and would in fact disappear, as we've spoken about. He was not involved in a lot of the planning to do with his father's funeral, and they would make reference of how he would be more involved with his mother's funeral as opposed to his father's funeral. Steve says it's a simple case of he knew his mother was going to die. His father was a shock.
How do you act? I mean, with my mom, you know, she had ALS. We knew she was going to pass away. And at this point, you know, my dad just died, you know, and my whole world changed. He was, you know, I loved him so much, and it changed everything. The thing is, you know, he was the one, I remember when he called, and he was so excited about the Porter Cottage being available, so we built our home there and everything right next door, and we got to build our dream home. And he was my contractor, basically, because I was out working, and I was on the road traveling, and he was my contractor and helped build our house. And I'd say we had our dream house next door and had a great relationship. And after that happened, I mean, everything just changed. And, you know, the family made a big deal about when Kenny and I left and went up north. We didn't want to be at our house anymore. It wasn't our dream house anymore. It was just a house. So when we went up north, and my brothers and sisters and everybody all said we just went up there and didn't contact. I was in constant contact with them. We brought out cell phone records and stuff like that, and constantly calling and talking to them. We came back, okay, of course, Dad's house fire was on the 20th. We came back on the 23rd, left on the 21st, came back on the 23rd from up northern Michigan, and the first place we stopped was Don's house because I was in contact, and he said stop by. And when we arrived there, Mattioli met me at the door and frisked me very well. First time I've ever been frisked in my life. And then the whole time we were there, he recorded everything that we said. You know, looking back, you know, I couldn't figure out what was going on. But that's day one of when Don and Mattioli were targeting me.
And were your other siblings there that day?
No.
Right, okay.
No, it was just Don and his live-in girlfriend, Mary Jo, and then Candy and I and our boys.
And what was spoken about?
Oh, talking about the fire and ideas and, you know, who could be behind it and like that. And it was, like I say, it was just that, you know, and I can't remember everything. I would imagine funeral arrangements and things like that. I honestly can't remember everything. There's a tape of it. I don't know if where that's at, but, you know, everything we said was recorded there.
A further claim would come that Steve and his wife, Candy, were having financial issues. They had a credit card debt of $20,000.
The more we worked on it, the more we could not eliminate Stephen. So
much of the evidence centered on the financial difficulties of Stephen and his wife, Candy, including a $20,000 credit card debt.
He was living far beyond his means. He liked all the toys, automobiles, jet skis, water skis, snow machines, all of that type of thing.
Now, a credit card debt of $20,000 today would, of course, be a high amount, but you wouldn't think worth killing someone to try and clear. In 1992, this, of course, was a lot higher, and in today's money would be closer to around the equivalent of just over $40,000. But as we know, Steve came from a very wealthy family, whose father regularly gifted his children money and even homes. He was often giving them help. So would a credit card debt be motive to kill your father? They talk about you were having financial difficulties, $20,000 credit card debt, which, I mean, these days doesn't seem a lot, but, you know, back in those days, 20 grand's quite a lot of money. So it's still quite a lot of money, but it's obviously a lot more back then. And they discussed that your dad was tired of always bailing you out of your debt and considered even cutting you out of the will.
Absolute false, you know, absolutely not true, you know, and did we have debt? Yes, we had some debt. We put everything into our house. We were dumping all kinds of money into that. That was the number one thing. So, I mean, far as actual cash flow, yeah, we were tight on that. But it was never a problem, and I think you and I have already discussed, you know, every year to all of us kids, he would donate or give us money all the time.
Yeah,
and he was going to continue to do that. And the thing is, too, which my brothers, sisters, nobody knew, anybody knew that was Candy and I, is we were also, he owned a lot of property on M37, and I was over there talking with him and about putting up a Taco Bell or Wendy's around Hastings because they didn't have one yet. And his response was, he says, get all the information, get everything, you know, for the franchise, the cost and everything, and then we'll sit down and see what we can't do. And I know I have explained to you, my dad and I, we had a very, very close friendship as a father and son. And like probably any father, you don't agree with everything we do, and you know, I probably wouldn't agree with everything that my kids did, but the thing is, he was always there and very, very close. I mean, my brothers never went fishing with him. He went fishing. My brothers or sisters never went snowmobiling with him. We went snowmobiling. We were a family, and they resented me for that.
Steve also says that the majority of this debt that was built up on the credit cards was actually done after his father had already passed away. Prior to his death, his father had bought tickets for Steve, his wife and the boys to come and spend some time with him in Florida. Steve's father would pass away before the intended trip took place. However, with all the stress of what had taken place, they wanted to get away, so decided to use the tickets and take the trip with their kids.
He was always bugging me and everything because he had bought airline tickets for Candy and I and McCoy's to come down in April to spend time at his house down in Florida. And we were all excited about that. And he was super excited. He was always bugging me because it was February, January and February, that I hadn't picked up the tickets yet. And I don't know. My thought was that's not until April. I wasn't really worried about picking them up. But with the $20,000, so after my father died, we had those tickets. You know, it was still a nightmare. Didn't want to be in our house. And even, you know, afterwards, we had burglar alarms put in. When we came back from the trip up north, we couldn't sleep. And a friend that had a concealed carry permit, he stayed at our house at night, stayed up all night because we couldn't sleep. We didn't want to be there. But anyway, when we went to Florida, we did take the boys and went to Florida. And, of course, we had anticipated staying at my dad's house. He had a large home there. So at that point in time, we used credit cards. We didn't carry a lot of cash every place we went, you know, we were at Disney World, we were at Epcot, Universal, Busch Gardens, we went to Key West, Sanibel Island, credit card everywhere. So, and that's what really built up that credit card debt at that point.
As you know, we're looking at claims that were made directly from private investigator Jerry Mattioli from an episode of Inside Edition from the early 90s. And I'm talking through these with Steve to get his responses. Watching this episode without any background information or any prior knowledge of this particular case or story, you would definitely come away thinking, wow, I mean, this guy set fire to his own father's home, as there are so many sensational claims made about Steve. One of the most damning comments, I believe, that was made on the show was this one.
Willard made a statement to his children that, at least to one, that if he ever turned up dead, that Stephen probably did it.
Which, of course, I took to Steve. Apparently your father said, if I turn up dead one day, Stephen probably did it.
Yeah, absolute fabrication and lie. He would never, ever have said that, ever. Never would have happened.
So during this part of our conversation, Steve and I would actually be cut off due to his phone time being up. However, the next time he called, it was quite obvious this had been playing on his mind. And he even mentioned that he'd not ever heard about this claim before.
Thank you for using GTL.
Hi, Jack.
How are you, Steve?
Yeah, not bad. How are you?
Mate, I am not bad at all. It's very humid here today, so I'm trying to stay indoors and try and stay cool. What's the weather like in Michigan at the moment?
It's we set a record today. I think it was 65, but we're supposed to have snow on Thanksgiving, which is next Thursday.
Obviously, it's a hard time for everyone inside facilities during the holiday season. What's Thanksgiving like in there?
Another day.
Yeah.
And always you pray for a peaceful one.
A lot of
it used to be special, and you'd have a really good meal, but now you just get processed food and crummy meal, basically.
Yeah, right. So why did they change that? Just a cost-saving exercise, I assume?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
That's a shame.
You gave me a surprise last time.
Did I?
I think you were talking about, was it Inside Edition or Current Affair or something that you watched?
Yeah, Inside Edition, yeah.
That I've never had the opportunity to see, and I've heard very, very little about it. And when you were saying, I think you said Jerry, was he the one they were interviewing?
Yeah, he was on there a lot.
Mattioli?
Yeah, he was on there a lot.
Yeah, and he's the one that said, the brother said that, you know, if anything ever happens, it'll be Steve and Jerry.
Well, yeah, he didn't say which brother, he just said one of the siblings said it.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, I don't know if we're into the questions or not, but I
Go
can guarantee 100% that was never ever said by my dad.
So were the police talking to you guys much about their investigation into the fire itself? Because it was quite a few months before you got a knock on the door, you know, with a suggestion that it might have been you. So were investigators talking to you? Were the police talking to you guys about what they were looking into?
No, not at all. The only information I was getting about anything going on was through Mattioli. Mattioli was the whole time, you know, I think around the 20, I don't know when he hired him, 20-something, 22nd or 23rd, he hired Mattioli. And Don had a cottage which my dad bought him, which was three houses from ours to the south. And Mattioli was living there and, you know, operating in his investigation on me from there. So everything that we were finding out was all Mattioli.
And did you speak to your other siblings much during this time?
Not a lot. They were around occasionally at my house or Don's house around, and after the funeral, everybody came to Candy's in our house after the funeral, but no, not that much.
So the case against Steve was starting to gain momentum. And he says he really began to have serious concerns about what was happening when he would arrive at his brother Don's house, be patted down, and then would be presented with a very bizarre situation.
Jerry Mattioli was living in my brother's cottage, three houses down, and there was a day that went by that, you know, he wasn't down there with me, and he kept telling me and telling Candy, your mailbox is filling up, your mailbox is filling up, and they're going to come and get you. And, of course, you know, he was working for the state, and Candy and I were also paying him. If we thought, you know, he'd be a good private investigator. And like I say, he kept saying that, and then one day he says, hop in, and we got in the car, and he takes me to Grand Rapids to an attorney's office, and David Dodge, and he came out, and then I went in, and David Dodge said, you're going to need an attorney, and he wanted a $100,000 retainer. So, and I was freaked out. I couldn't believe it was happening.
So the private investigator took you to an attorney. Was he saying to you that, you know, the cops are looking at you for this, you need an attorney?
Yeah, he kept telling me he knew I was guilty, and he said, the police know you're guilty, and you need an attorney, and he kept saying, your mailbox is filling up. Come to find out, as time went by, he was the one filling up the mailbox with lies and everything, and I think I already told you that State Police Detective Ron Neal, in court, he said they would have never looked at me or had evidence to arrest me or anything if it wasn't for all the stuff that Jerry Mattioli handed to him and alleged evidence. You know, it was all bullcrap. But what I really knew what was going on, I'm very naive, I guess. You know, I've only had traffic tickets and never in problems with the law. A couple days before we were going to go to Florida, and I'm assuming it was late March, early April, because it was before Easter, during spring break for the kids, and I get the phone rings, and it's Don, and he's down at his house or his cottage with Mattioli. And I'll never forget this as long as I live either, Jack. So I walk down there, and I walked in, and Don is sitting in his living room, in the middle of the living room, in a chair, in a black suit. Mattioli's on one side of him, and another guy's on the other side, both wearing weapons underneath their arm. And Don looked at me, said, I'm not going to be able to take care of your house or watch your house when you're in Florida. He says, we're done. And that's the second I knew that Don and Mattioli were setting me up. I never knew until then. And I'll never forget that. And the only thing I've looked for 31 years, it reminded me of the Godfather movie. It's like that when I walked in and saw him sitting in there in that black suit with two armed guys next to him and telling me that. I'll never forget that, you know, in my whole life.
Let's go to the moment that you are arrested for this. How long after the fire and everything did the police knock on your door?
They never came to the door. On April 21st, my attorney at that time, I did hire David Dodge. He came out with another attorney, and they said, we got to go in, and the police want to talk to you and Candy.
So you chose to go with that lawyer, even though you know, this PI was saying to you, oh, you're guilty, the police are coming for you, you need a lawyer, go with this guy. Wouldn't you be a little bit concerned about going with the attorney that this PI was suggesting?
Well, no, I would be. I mean, Jack, I thought, you know, we hired this guy. He's supposed to be a top private investigator. And I would think, since I'm paying him, he'd be doing things in the best interest for me and trying to help me out.
So when he's saying to you that you're guilty and, you know, things are piling up against you, weren't you saying to him, hold on a second, why are you pointing the finger at me? Like, you're supposed to be working for me. Why are you saying I'm the one who's done this?
Oh, yeah, I definitely did that. And he just, you know, kept saying, no, the police are, their mailbox is filling up with them, stuff like that. And like I say, I was naive. I've never had any problems with the police or anything. I was stupid when it came to legal matters and knowing what's going on. I got an education quick, and it's cost me 31 years.
So the whole time he's coming back to you, sort of reporting back to you, essentially, he's saying, you know, I'm doing my investigation, Steve, and everything so far is pointing to you, I'm afraid. It's pointing to you're the one who's done this.
Well, no, he never really said that he was pointing at it. He was always saying the police, you know, and all the evidence that they're collecting and got, it's all coming towards me. But it was actually all him. And I never knew that for 100% fact. I knew that when I saw him in Don's house, you know, on the side of him there, that he was involved. But I never knew how much until we got into the preliminary examination and he took the stand. And then I was dumbfounded, and so was Candy.
So Steve's attorney calls him and tells him that the police would like to speak with him and his wife, Candy. and they make their way with their attorney to the police station, where they are both subsequently charged with the murder of Willard Lawrence.
On the 21st, when we went into the sheriff's station and the jail, they arrested both Candy and I and charged us with first-degree murder, both of us, on April 21st, 1992.
Did the police question you that day?
No, not that I remember. I don't remember any of it. They may have, but I don't remember them questioning me at all after that. They may have, but I don't remember it.
Right.
I'll have to ask Candy because she was in jail too. I don't think that they questioned at all.
Okay.
After that.
Right. So they put you in jail. So they arrest you and then they put you in jail. Was there a, did you get a chance to bond out or did they just put you in jail with no bond?
Yes, I had no bond. Candy eventually did get out on bond after, I don't know, a week or so, a couple weeks. She got out on bond, but they never let me out. I've been in here since April 21st, 1992.
So, I mean, you're a man who'd never been in trouble with the law before, apart from a few parking tickets or so. So what was that like going to jail for the first time? You know, it must have been a real culture shock.
Oh, unbelievable, especially from the life that I was living and had and grown up with. And then going to that, it was a hell of a shock. It's still a shock every day. You never get used to it.
As we know, Steve makes absolutely no secret of the fact that he believes wholeheartedly that his brother Don, with the help of former detective turned PI Jerry Mattioli, set him up. But why? Apart from, you know, you've said that Don, you believe, was a bit jealous of you, or, you know, especially when you had your sons and your father was, you know, doting on your sons because obviously you carry on the family name sort of thing and all the rest of it. What did he have against you so much to go after you like this?
I don't know. You know, he was like that, and my guess is I don't know if he's guilty or not. If I knew that, you know, maybe I wouldn't be here today. But he was sure shifting blame very, very quickly. And, I mean, why did Don go to my dad's house when after my wife and kids had all the lights on, the heat on and everything, and turn all the lights off, disable the fire and burglar alarm when they know he's coming home? It's never, ever happened since they built that house.
Yes, you heard that right. On the night that Steve's father would return to his home, Don Lawrence would turn up and switch off all the lights that Candy and the kids had turned on in preparation for Willard's return. And on his way out, would disable the home's burglar alarm and fire alarm. And this isn't just something Steve is saying it's fact. This is something that Don himself would testify to during the trial.
Next day, not the police. Okay, this is a murder investigation. He had the fire department break into my dad's safe, and we all watched. We were in our house watching, and when they got that door open, he had hefty plastic bags that he was filling everything up. He was just running, and he'd fill bags up and run down to his cottage. He'd come back, fill another bag up, and run down to his cottage. And then when we tried to get what was in the safe, he refused to turn it over, even with a court order.
You have 1 minute remaining.
And that's all we've got time for. But coming up in our next episode, of course, we look into Brother Don, just what he got up to the evening of his father's fire.
Because there was a huge bell outside there that if they had a fire or something like that would be ringing, plus it would have notified the fire departments like that, and none of that happened. And the only way that could have happened is, like I say, he went into this closet and disabled it.
Next time on 1 Minute Remaining. 1 Minute Remaining is a Mashed Pumpkin production, created, hosted, and produced by Jack Lawrence. Audio and sound design by Jack Lawrence and Dom Evans of Earsay.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.